This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of VSiN Prime Time. We got a game going on down in Durham, North Carolina. 19-17, Duke leading the defending national champion Florida Gators, and the Gators tied up with a dunk along the baseline. Halftime in New York, Matt. Syracuse, maybe upset lurking against Tennessee as a 8-point underdog. Syracuse Orange lead 32-30. So there's a ton going on. Obviously, college basketball, NBA as well. So let's get all the information you need to know right now.
Where are the lines changing and where's the money going? Let's go behind the counter.
VP of Risk Management over at the Westgate Superbook is the one and only Jeff Sherman. You could follow him on Twitter at Golf Odds. He joins us right now courtesy of our Progressive guest line. Jeff, we got a couple NBA games tipping off here in about 10 minutes. And looking at the Westgate numbers, Boston, a pick'em against the Knicks at home. New Orleans catching 12.5 at home against Minnesota. And the San Antonio Spurs laying 5 against Memphis. What have you seen from those games? And anything you like personally from those three games about to tip off here later on this hour?
I'm not involved myself on anything, but obviously the most action of the day has been the Knicks-Celtics. We had the Celtics -1, little Knicks action late, got us to pick them on that one. The Minnesota line against New Orleans has been driven up just because Zion, shockingly, is out again. Eves Missy is out, too. So New Orleans has their youth squad going like they did against the Lakers the other night. So one-way traction on the Timberwolves in that one.
Jeff, I was looking at the Memphis-San Antonio game tonight. Who's in? Who's out? Spurs, 5-point favorites, total of 232.5. Are the Spurs still severely shorthanded?
Well, they're still waiting for Castle and Wembanyama to come back, but it shouldn't be much longer. They might be back for the NBA Cup game at the Lakers on December 10th. That might be a target or just after that. But, you know, they've been holding their own. I believe they're 5-2 without Wemby. Pretty good record, holding their own with Fox leading the way. So, you know, they're only one game behind Houston in the division. I thought they might have fallen further back with Wemby missing so much time. But Spurs, if they can maintain any type of health, they could be a team that will make some noise in the second half.
I'm curious what you think of the Memphis Grizzlies. So I noticed Zach Edey had 32 points, was 17 rebounds, 5 blocks, and Tim, you remember when Edey was winning back-to-back Wooden Awards in college and so many of the Twitter experts were saying, he can't play in the NBA, he's going to be a bust. What do you think of this Grizzlies team when they get healthy, when they get Ja out there? Can the Grizzlies be any sort of factor in the West?
No, I don't believe so, because the teams at the top are just too much for them. And the problem, Morant has been in and out of the lineup the last few years, so you can't rely on him being there. And I think this team would be best served if they could move on from him, but his trade value is at the lowest point it's been. So it's a tough predicament for him, but they're not a threat to anybody in the Western Conference.
OKC Thunder 20-1 going into tonight's game. Thunder 10-1 on the road. That one loss was at Portland when they were up, what was it, Jeff? Up 22, I think, in the loss by two. Yeah. 12-game win streak going to San Francisco in this one tonight, and 11.5-point favorite. Who's out for the Warriors?
Well, Steph Curry's still out. He's out for a few weeks, but Butler's supposed to play. Okay. So that's how much of an effect Curry has on this team, and we've seen it over the years that he's the cog that makes this team going. Without him, they're just a different team. But, I mean, the Thunder power rating laying 11.5, they've been doing this to everybody. So, you know, if it's much shorter, we would just get overwhelmed with Thunder money.
Yeah, but the Warriors signed Seth Curry. Couldn't Seth step in and play like Steph?
So they hope, but I don't expect his minutes to be too high.
I want to ask you about the L.A. Clippers. Scott Pritchard, who's a pro sports bettor out of Vegas, big-time Clippers fan, had his Clippers sweatshirt on as he sat in the Westgate Sportsbook the other night and watched the Clippers lose their sixth straight home game. What a disaster this team is looking like right now, Jeff. Clippers are 5-16, lost five in a row off a blowout loss at Miami. Clippers on the road at Atlanta tomorrow. Looks like the Hawks open as 4-point favorites. What do you make of the Clippers? Has this been a bet against team for you?
Yes, just a train wreck is all you can explain them with. And they've had many games that haven't even been close. I mean, that game against Miami the other night, you know, when they say they're trying to get the road trip started correctly, but it's been really bad. And, you know, Kawhi and Harden doing what they can, but they're not getting much help elsewhere. Zubats is really the only other piece. It's evident how much they miss Norman Powell. It's a lot more than that, but they basically got John Collins for Norman Powell, and John Collins isn't reliable. They've got a lot of issues, and their draft pick goes to Oklahoma City, unprotected first for next year. So that's just what Oklahoma City needs.
I was going to say, what, are the Thunder going to win like five of the next six NBA championships the way they're set up or what?
I mean, you know, they've got so many assets and so many draft assets. If I don't think they should, but if they wanted to, they could be the ones that go out and get Giannis.
Uh-huh.
You know, they would have more to offer than any other team. But, I mean, the direction they're going with the guys that they got signed, I wouldn't be looking at doing that, but they could if they wanted.
Jeff Sherman giving us the latest from Behind the Counter, VP of Risk Management over at the Westgate Superbook. Week 13 of the NFL season, Jeff, wrapped up last night. Before we look ahead, and a pretty good one on Thursday night with the Cowboys and Lions, how did last night for you guys Behind the Counter play out?
It was not good just because of the residual going to the Patriots with teasers, moneyline parlays, things like that, even though there were some upsets through the week. It was just one-way traffic in that regard on the Patriots. You know, Giants, one of the lower teams that's a fade for the betting public, and especially with it going over the total.
Jeff, looking ahead to Thursday, the start of Week 14, Cowboys, Lions. Right now, you guys at the Westgate have Cowboys plus +3, even money. Total sitting at 54.5 this game in Detroit. Any early action to note for the Thursday nighter in Detroit?
It's been all Dallas so far. They took 3.5, and they're taking some plus +3 even. You know, this is like the dichotomy of the lowest point for the Lions and the highest point for the Cowboys recently. We had this a couple weeks ago on the look ahead of 5.5. So, you know, it's really come down quite a bit. But, I mean, I understand what we've seen on the field of play. But right now, everybody wants Dallas, and they don't want much to do with Detroit.
What else jumps out to you here on the Week 14 card that's going to be a significant game for you as a bookmaker? Let's start with Bears-Packers. Green Bay is 6.5-point favorite. Does that number hit 7 this week or no?
I don't believe so. It's we did take sharp money at 5.5 to drive it up to 6.5. But the way the Bears are playing, especially coming off the win at Philly last Friday, I think if you saw a 7, it would be snapped up. Or if it got to 7, you'd see the dog price favored enough on it. But I don't think it will. I think it's going to be a form of 6.5 before it hits 7.
All right, your wife, Christy, is a big-time Broncos fan. She's going to be thrilled with the way this season's going. Broncos are going to be in Vegas this weekend, 7.5, 8-point favorites. Jeff, you know, as an odds maker, as a handicapper, how much of a case could you make for the Raiders here if you tried? Do you think it would have to be more about the Broncos being flat?
Well, first of all, we'll be attending this game. Mm-hmm. It's Kaylee's birthday, so Christy and I are taking her to this game. I think the Raiders could hang in there. I mean, they lost by 3 in Denver. You know, it was a low-scoring game. We're at 7.5. There's some 8s out there, but if we see something similar to that, first of all, Denver, when they're winning, is not winning by a margin.
Right.
You know, they're almost doing what the Chiefs did last year, winning every close game, and that can catch up. I'm not saying the Raiders are going to win, but it's a hefty number to lay with Denver the way they're winning games.
Jeff Sherman, once again, joining us here, courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line, taking a look at some of the early Week 14 games. We've got Sunday Night Football, Kansas City laying 3.5. I want to start with that game first before looking at where you're at from a future standpoint on Kansas City. But right now, Chiefs 3.5, even money, total 42. Jeff, what have you seen so far on Sunday Night Football?
Yeah, that's been all Texan support, and we're seeing it every which way on Houston with what they've been doing lately. Betting them for the division, conference, Super Bowl. So we're at plus +3.5, dog 16 on that one. Again, 16-cent line, so minus -3.5 even on Kansas City. But, you know, some threes have shown up. We're sitting at the 3.5 aspect. But So far, it's been heavy traffic on Houston.
You know, Jeff, AFC Championship odds, I'm looking at them right now at the Westgate. You've got Chiefs and Ravens both sitting at plus 725. Both of them lose on Thanksgiving. They both, I would imagine, are power rated still relatively high, but they're both sitting there with pretty mediocre records at 6-6. How do you properly adjust teams like the Chiefs and the Ravens in the futures market?
You know, part of it has to do with what our position is built up throughout the season and what we can sell and relative to market pricing. And, you know, they're in a tough predicament. Kansas City could miss the playoff, but, you know, we're in good shape on them for the conference. So, you know, we try to go a little bit higher and try to sell some at this point. Not too many people interested right now. We keep riding Patriots and Broncos because of their top seeds in the AFC, but you know, we'll keep maneuvering these at this position, a lot of it based on what our position is.
Jeff, how about the Hero World Challenge? We got a pretty good golf tournament in the Bahamas this week with some big names. Not as many big names as you hope to see, but what's a highlight for you, and is there a bet you like out there in the Bahamas?
Yeah, this is a disappointing field this year. I mean, it's Scheffler, an overwhelming favorite. I did play him last week at plus 190, and I'm at plus 140 on him. I think anything north of plus 150, just because you look at the relative field here, and McIntyre and Cameron Young are next at 14-1. And if you look at Scheffler, he's finished second, and 1-1. So he's going for a three-peat here. And you can talk about all the time that he's taken off, but the lack of quality of the field in this one with top golfers from a competitive standpoint, it's tough to go against them.
Who would you play if you didn't play Scheffler?
I would have to go with Justin Rose, just because he lives in the Bahamas in the off season and knows his course well.
Jeff, always appreciate it. Jeff Sherman, Golf Odds is where you can follow him on Twitter, VP of Risk Management. Update from Cameron Indoor, the Dukies trying to extend that lead.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back. Matt Humans doesn't like talking on the phone. Oh, it is VSiN Primetime. We got a lot of college basketball going on. 32-32 underway in the start of the second half between Tennessee and Syracuse. Texas A&M on the road at Pitt, a 48-41 lead with 15 and a half minutes to go in the second half. The Florida Gators, Matt, looked like early on they were going to fight the Duke Blue Devils. Well, right now, the Blue Devils doing their patented big run. They are now up 32-21 with the under four media timeout. This was a 19-19 game, so I'll do the math for you. A 13-2 run here for the Duke Blue Devils.
Your math is on point tonight, Tim.
I'm on fire.
You're not going to slip up. Nobody's going to catch you making a mistake. I will say that Duke been pretty impressive here, pulling away from Florida tonight. But I want to see Duke tested on some true road games before I go crazy about this. It's a really young team, and I think that's where the Blue Devils are going to be vulnerable when you get them away from home on some tough atmospheres. And obviously tonight's playing right into their hands. So that's one thing. I thought Duke was far more talented last season with Cooper Flagg. And what, they have five draft picks in the top 35.
Con Knipple's like playing exceptionally well in the NBA right now. Hopefully he can lead the Hornets to a couple more wins. That would be nice.
I bet two NBA season win totals. The Miami Heat over 36.5 and the Hornets over 25.5. The Heat right now off to a great start. I put those both in the VSiN NBA guide. And you probably didn't bet the Heat, did you?
I did not. Only bet the Hornets, Matt.
The Heat, 14-7. And this team's looking pretty good. So I feel good about that one. Our Charlotte Hornets bet.
Oof. You got two straight wins, though. No, we just lost the other day.
6-15. Hornets are 6-15. Slightly behind pace, but Tim, after 21 games, they're not far behind pace, despite that poor start. So feel much better about the Heat than the Hornets, but still alive with the Hornets on that win total.
Should have told me to bet over Oklahoma City, man.
You know what? The Thunder, it's looking like We were talking about this with Jeff Sherman, and I'm sure JVT talks about it a lot, but with all the draft assets built up and all the talent on that roster, I think the Denver Nuggets are the team in the West most likely to be able to take down OKC in the playoffs. But, Tim, OKC is built to win like 3 out of 4 NBA championships here, 4 out of 5. They've done a phenomenal job of building this thing and preparing for the future and ripping off the Clippers in that trade.
Stockpiling draft picks after draft picks, Matt, yeah. And they are, boy, that trade.
We'll take Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and a bunch of draft picks and give you back a bag of garbage. And look where the Clippers
That'd
are
Paul
right
George.
Now. Paul George at one point was a really valuable asset.
He was.
The problem is the Clippers thought they were one player away from winning an NBA championship. They were not. Right now they're 5-16.
We got championship weekend coming up in college football. The latest playoff rankings were revealed earlier tonight. We'll revisit those, what they did to the line. I know Matt needs us to revisit those. He's very excited about that. But we do have a lot of movement from a coaching standpoint. And the big one today, Matt, is the lack of movement, which is Kalani Sitake. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, it seemed like he'd be headed to Penn State to fill that vacancy that's been open for, what, almost 2 months in Happy Valley. Well, apparently Crumble Cookie and all these other people came together and ponied up because Kalani Sitake ain't going anywhere. He's staying at his alma mater, and they will be all focused as they head into the Big 12 championship game with a chance to play in the college football playoff. So Kalani Sitake staying at BYU, and while these other jobs keep getting filled up, Penn State still sitting there without a head coach.
Now, Penn State's got an opportunity to find a pretty good coach. I'll talk about it in a minute. And Jimmy Sexton, the agent for Lane Kiffin and a bunch of other high-powered coaches.
James Franklin as well.
Yep. Is roadblocking, we'll call it, Penn State from hiring certain guys. And Kalani Sitake was not a Jimmy Sexton client. But if you haven't noticed, there's a lot of money behind BYU.
Oh, yeah.
The church and everything that's out there. And the BYU basketball program's got a ton of money behind it. And they said, those powers said, we're not going to let you steal our coach. And, you know, I thought that he was going to be a bad fit for Penn State anyway. Be careful what you wish for sometimes. You just might get it. And I think that Sitake and Penn State both better off without each other. Penn State still got a better chance, a chance to find a better coach, a better fit for that program. And Sitake is a West Coast guy. Who's got that recruiting pipeline built to Provo there. He's much more effective as the BYU coach. His future is going to be with BYU, and that's where it should be, not with Penn State. I just thought he's a poor fit. You and I talked about that on the show last night. There's still plenty of options out there for Penn State, and still plenty of attractive options, one being Billy Napier. This is a guy – no, I'm just kidding.
I was saying, wait, what is happening? Wait, did you
– I wanted to see if you were listening.
I was watching the Duke game. Wait, what? Sunbelt Billy? All right, I'm curious.
I just wanted to see if you were paying attention.
See if I'm just getting the nod. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. That'd be good. That'd be good, Matt. Yeah. Well, if Billy Napier's not available, he turns him down. I got I'm going to.
Brian Kelly's out, by the way. Don't even talk about Brian Kelly. He doesn't have the motivation to recruit.
He's not. I don't think he's coaching again. I think he's going to sit back with his $54 million. Right. Maybe he'll show up on television a couple times. Yeah. But I think he wants to golf and sit back on his lumps of cash. Had a hell of a career. Won a lot of college football games. He's 64 years old. I do think a Brian would make sense. Brian Daboll. What about Brian Daboll?
Yeah, Brian Daboll's one of the names I was going to throw out there. I like Daboll. I also like Joe Brady.
Okay.
Joe Brady right now is the Bills offensive coordinator. He was the OC at LSU in 2019 when Joe Burrow had the best season for any quarterback in the history of college football with 60 touchdown passes and 6 picks, and LSU went 15-0. Joe Brady was OC for that team. Now he's in Buffalo working with Josh Allen. Now you could say, that's a pretty big job for Joe Brady to get for the first time for his college head coaching job. I agree. But at the same time, I don't think he'd do any worse than James Franklin in terms of big games. And he also be a lot more creative offensively. Brady's, I think you have to look, first of all, for a head coach. And You know, I like, rewind it a little bit to a year ago when Purdue hired Barry Odom.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people, that's a really good hire for Purdue. Well, I watched the season, and I like Odom. And he's great in terms of a guy who's got sound fundamentals, who's going to build a program, but it's going to take some time. You know what Barry Odom's not? And it was exposed this year. He's not a creative offensive mind. And he's got to hire a really good offensive coordinator, or that thing's not going to work, Tim, because you got to find a different way to win sometimes. And Joe Tiller won there. Jeff Brohm won there with different, more innovative offenses, right? So at Penn State, you got to have a guy who's going to be young, energetic, who's going to be a really good recruiter. You also have to bring a guy, if you're going to overtake Ohio State, you got to bring in a guy who's really creative, offensive thinker. And that's what Joe Brady is. So I think you want something different. What did you think James Franklin's weakness was? Probably the fact that he was very weak in terms of game clock and game management situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
He choked under pressure a lot of times.
Well, that was the biggest one.
Made poor decisions under pressure. And Penn State never really had an imaginative offense, right? They didn't do much.
Well, think about,
we're very creative on offense.
Well, think about last year in the semifinal against Notre Dame. They completed zero passes to wide receivers.
They're sick. The game against Ohio State a year ago when they can't score inside the 5-yard
line. First and goal at the one. They don't get the ball to Tyler Warren, who is a superstar.
I think Brian Daboll would be a pretty good backup plan. But Joe Brady's somebody I think needs to get a more serious look. And
Jeff Brohm, is he going to stay at Louisville? I would also look at.
I think he's going to stay. He's home. That's where he wants to be. I think that's Brohm's in the right spot at Louisville.
Brian Hartline is a name that continues to get some buzz.
He's an Ohio State guy, though.
If recruiting is the name of the game, he is an elite recruiter. That is for sure.
Does Penn State hire? Does an Ohio State guy want to go to Penn State?
It's not like it's Michigan.
It's a rival, though. It's
that's
a big
true.
Time rival. If you're an Ohio State guy, you bleed scarlet and gray, do you take the Penn State job? I'm sure you would because it's such a big job.
Luke Fickell's at Wisconsin. I know it's not the same thing. Luke Fickell's at Wisconsin. Marcus Freeman's at Notre Dame.
Let me ask you, do you think a guy like Dabo Swinney would be in play for Penn State? He needs a change of scenery. And Clemson, I think, needs something different.
I think it would be a unique hire. Uh-huh. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it wouldn't be the worst move in the world. All right, we got some games hitting the half, so we'll get to those on the other side, including Duke and Florida. We'll get you prepared for our VSiN primetime game of the night, which of course is UConn visiting Kansas. But just a reminder, before the line moves, the sharp plays already there. They don't just follow the market, they help move it. Since 2011, the sharp plays have delivered documented results, public logs, and transparent receipts. sharpplays.com, trusted by pros, watched by the books. Visit sharpplays.com and stay ahead of the line.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
College basketball galore tonight. Purdue and Rutgers going on at the Rack. I will always call it the Rack, even though I believe it's Jersey Mike's Arena. Number one, Purdue taking on the Scarlet Knights, Matt. We got 6.5 minutes to go in the first half. A 6-point lead for the Boilermakers. Rutgers closing at what? Around a 17-point underdog in this one?
No. I took 17 with Rutgers last night at Circa. It was 17 here. That was a high point. It was 16.5 a lot of spots in the market. But it actually dipped to 13.5 today.
Yeah.
A tip-off. So I do have a play on Rutgers here, catching 17. But it was you had to bet that overnight if you're going to get that number. It did drop this morning. 25-19 now with 6 minutes to go in the first half. Yeah, I'm really annoyed. I blew it on that Tennessee-Syracuse game because I thought about taking the points with Syracuse. Tim, you know, you bet college hoops. There is no league or sport, whatever you want to call it, in the world where home court or home advantage means more than college hoops, right? And I think a lot of times, like, well, just because this team's more talented, this team's far better, they're going to go on the road and crush this team. Home court means a lot in college hoops. Right now we're seeing Michigan State just put a whipping on Iowa, right? Purdue struggling a little bit here with Rutgers. Tennessee on the road at Syracuse tonight losing. Duke at home, up big on Florida at halftime. Florida can't hit a three. That's one thing you got to keep in mind is respect the home dogs in college basketball because you're going to see a lot of upsets. And taking the points, there's a lot more value with it in college hoops than there is in many other things. Like, you really think there's not that much of a home court advantage in the NBA?
No. Playoffs, maybe. NBA finals, maybe. But no, I agree, especially as you get into conference play, as you alluded to. That'll be massive.
We're starting to see some conference games now. Yep. The Big Ten's got some games scheduled this week starting tonight.
We do have halftime down in Cameron Indoor, an impressive first half for the Duke Blue Devils as they go into the locker rooms up 36-24. They are a 14.5-point favorite right now in that one.
Florida 3-for-16 from three.
And see if they can bounce back there. 2.5-point second half underdog in that one. The SEC challenge going on right now. Oklahoma with a 1-point lead over Wake Forest as that one unfolding currently as well. Matt, your favorite night of the week is Tuesday because you love the college football playoff show. You sometimes want to step out so you can hear the banter.
Well, I record it, Tim. I go home tonight and I break down the tape and hear what's said because it's so important.
Well,
Hunter Yurecek, the college football committee chairman, he says so many dumb things every week. The Bear, Chris Felica, I was talking with him last week. He was on the Friday night show with me, and he said they should not allow Hunter Yurecek to even talk anymore.
Well, he contradicts himself every single which way. And, you know, it's funny because last week Alabama dropped to 10, and I thought that was a bit surprising based off of their resume and the wins that they have, including a road win at Georgia. I didn't think they should have dropped to 10. Well, this past week, Matt, you and I were on the Auburn Tigers. We took the points, and unfortunately, we didn't get there. Kalen DeBoer goes for it on fourth down in a 20-20 game, and they get a touchdown. Cam Coleman fumbles inside Alabama territory, and then the rankings come out this week, and because of a win over a 5-7 Auburn team, Alabama jumps Notre Dame, which, once again, I actually thought Alabama should have never been behind Notre Dame. But they were. But this result from the weekend, apparently, Matt, was mighty impressive to the committee. Quote, the committee just felt that was enough of a win of a metric to push Alabama
he doesn't know what
ahead of Notre Dame. Alabama, in a rivalry game on the road, Auburn has been an extremely tough place to play for many teams this year, such as Georgia and Vanderbilt. The committee gave Alabama respect for that game. Nicole Auerbach was tweeting this. Hunter Yurecek said Alabama's early 17-point lead over 5-7 Auburn, as she put in parentheses, which they then blew, and then the, quote, gutsy call there late in the game to go for it on 4th-and-2 and the late forced turnover were what it impressed the committee.
The committee is now grading gutsy calls.
And wins over 5-7 teams who fired their coach. Matt, what was the
411-280. I know what
Alabama had more, right? Alabama had more than Auburn?
Auburn outgained Alabama.
Auburn going to the college football playoff this year, Auburn?
5-7. Going that, nowhere.
Do you get to a bowl game then?
No.
No? Okay.
Auburn outgained Alabama 411-280. But the committee was impressed by Alabama and the gutsy call. This committee is a clown show. It is. It's unbelievable.
The debate between Notre Dame and Alabama has been one of the fiercest debates for the last 3 weeks, and it has really split our committee room. That was a quote from Hunter Yurecek.
Yeah.
We'll see how it plays out. Once again, if you're wondering where Miami was, they did not move up, but they did not move down. They're sitting at 12. BYU at 11. If they beat Texas Tech, BYU is in, obviously, with the auto bid for a conference championship. Alabama jumps Notre Dame from 10-9. Notre Dame drops back to number 10. It is fair to say Oklahoma, now a lock. Texas A&M, a lock. Ole Miss, a lock. Oregon, lock. Texas Tech, I think, is a lock, even with the loss to BYU. And then, obviously, the top three are good to go. Georgia, Indiana, and Ohio State.
Well, I will say the committee did strengthen its itself this week. Five new members were added to the committee.
They were.
I don't know if you read about this.
No, I have not.
Yeah. Paul Feinbaum, Screamin' Ace Smith, Skip Bayless, Carrot Top.
And, ooh, Carrot Top's in there.
And Kirk Herbstreit's dog.
Alabama or Miami, plus 650. So that number has actually come down. It was 10 to 1 after it was revealed. So someone taking a shot at Miami to make the playoff. I think, Matt, this is my gut telling me, if BYU gets blown out, Miami will jump them. And if Alabama wins or loses close, my gut tells me Miami jumps Notre Dame. It's just my gut. And it's not me being a pessimistic Notre Dame fan. I think there's a lot of public outcry. And the fact of the matter is Miami has played significantly better in the month of November. And the metrics are very, very similar to them and Notre Dame. And, of course, in week one, they had the head-to-head win. I don't know if that is – I think the unfortunate part, and I've said this a bunch, because the ACC is run by a bunch of buffoons – and they have a five-way tie for second place, and somehow they allowed a 7-5 team with losses to Duke and Tulane and Illinois in the non-con, and no wins against teams with above .500 conference record, Duke, to get in. By the way, James Madison, number 25, Duke is unranked. If Duke beats Virginia as a 3.5-point underdog in Charlotte, the ACC could be left out of the college football playoff.
College football has been a flawed, model for a long time. You know, you had two teams playing for the championship, where you just have a poll where you would vote for the champion. Then you had two teams. It took the longest time to expand it to four. You know, it's
wait, think about the fact in 1997, Michigan and Nebraska both go undefeated, but they can't play each other because Michigan had to go to the Rose Bowl.
A lot of times you had co-champions too. Yeah. You'd have a champ in one poll, a champ in the other poll. It's been a flawed model for so long. There's no way really to achieve perfection. I think the more I think about it, a 16-team playoff would be okay. And you don't have to have byes, right?
Get rid of conference championship weekend, in my opinion.
I don't think they'll ever do that because it generates so much
money. Too much money. No, I get it.
16 teams in a bracket. There's no byes. You just like the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, right? Number one faces number 16 in the first round, and that might be the best way to do it. And that way, there's still going to be a team or two that's going to complain about getting left out. But this year, you're going to get Miami in. Mm-hmm. You're going to get Vanderbilt, Texas. I don't really think there's going to be much complaining about the 17th team. And one of the flawed arguments here for Miami, is that the Hurricanes are not even going to make the ACC championship game, and that's a bad conference.
You look at this year and – I'm not going to say that losing to Louisville and SMU is despicable.
No.
But you lose to SMU, Matt, they in turn wrap up the regular season losing to a team in Cal that just fired their head coach and got blown out by Stanford. But
I would like to see Miami in it.
I would do.
Vandy, Texas, Notre Dame. I'd like to see all those teams in a 16-team bracket. No byes. Number one plays 16, two plays 15. I think that's the best way to do it.
I would love to see Diego Pavia in the playoff this year. I really like this Miami team. I think they would have a chance to win some games. So we'll see how it ultimately plays out. But that is where we
how
sit right now.
How can the committee be impressed by Alabama's?
What a win, Matt.
Oh, really impressive win, or a metric, over Auburn. He didn't even know what he's talking about.
They outgained him by 120. Oh, wait, no,
Alabama
wait.
Alabama was outgained by 130 yards, and the committee's impressed.
But Oklahoma's best win, Matt. They go on the road to Alabama. They get outgained by almost 200 yards, 5% postgame win expectancy. But hey, they had a dominant win over LSU this weekend. Oklahoma did. What a performance they had. That offense is humming, boys and girls.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
V VSiN Pro subscribers now have access to our new AI player prop projections powered by Opta AI, the trusted data source behind elite soccer analytics in the UK. You'll get data-driven projections for quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs, plus exclusive NBA player prop projections, all compared directly to DraftKings lines to help you find the value. You can access it with a VSiN Pro subscription, vsin.com/subscribe. And of course, we've got a great Black Friday deal going on over at vsin.com. $60 gets you a VSiN Pro subscription through May 1st. Matt, I was just thinking about it during the break. Boy, you made a gutsy decision today. You went to McDonald's before work today?
No. I did not. Actually, I went to, it was a gutsy decision. I went outside my comfort zone today. I went to Panera Bread.
Ooh, I'm a big Panera Bread guy.
They got this new grilled chicken avocado BLT sandwich. Have you had it?
I have not.
It's outstanding.
That sounds terrific.
Panera also has the best tuna. I don't eat tuna salad very often, but they got this pick two where you get two sandwiches. So I got that grilled chicken avocado BLT and the tuna. Got one, ate one there, one to go. And I don't go to Panera too often, like once a month, but it worked today. Sometimes you got to step outside your comfort zone, not go to McDonald's and go somewhere else.
So. I'm laughing. Rivalry game on the road, tough place to play. Gutsy decision on fourth down. That's the reason Alabama jumped over Notre Dame. Once again, I think Alabama should have never dropped below Notre Dame, but the reason they popped back over them, Matt, was because of a dominant win over Auburn this past weekend.
Get out game by 130 yards. How's that dominant?
Post-game win expectancy of 45% on SP+.
Now we have a committee that's grading gutsy calls. Are we going to bump this team up? Because that was a gutsy call. It's beyond ridiculous at this point. But I do think the more I've considered this, that the 16-team bracket's going to be the way to go in the future.
I do think this is where it will go. And if the ACC were hypothetically to get left out, would that lead to a bigger push for the 16-team tournament? We'll see.
But college football, college sports in general, kind of off the rails with everything that's happened. Unrestricted free agency, conference expansion. Look, you're not going to have two true conference champions, and it's going to be hard to compare some of these teams or measure some of these teams when all the top teams in the league don't play each other because the conferences are too big. You've got 18 teams in a super conference. And you're going to play a 9-game season or an 8-game season. College football, college sports in general, just much better off, Tim, when you had the Pac-12, the Big Ten the way it was, the SEC the way it was, Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12. So you got all sorts of problems here you can't fix. But college football, I think if you go to a 16-team bracket, like the NCAA tournament Sweet 16, that's going to be the way to sort of fix this playoff problem.
One more point I just want to make out of your chick. At his quote regarding Alabama winning at Auburn, he said, Auburn's an extremely tough place to play for many teams this year, such as Georgia and Vanderbilt. Auburn played at Vanderbilt this year. Mm-hmm. That game went to overtime, but they didn't play at Auburn, which is an extremely tough place to play. All right, we move on.
We know he doesn't know what he's talking about, but college hoops updates.
Yes.
Michigan State, 5-point favorite all over Iowa. Talk about the home court. Spartans up 69-46, so my Hawkeyes getting beat down tonight. Bennett Sturt's 14 points, but Michigan State making a statement. Tennessee and Syracuse, how about this? The Vols, about 8.5-point favorites on the road, trail 52-51, 7.5 minutes ago. Duke, 9-point home favorite, up 38-33 on Florida, 16 minutes to go. Purdue at the half, closed a 13.5-point favorite, 14 in a couple spots. Up by 13 at the half, 40-27 at Rutgers.
Elsewhere, Matt, we will get to the games coming up top of the hour, but we do have a tie ball game in that ACC-SEC challenge. A minute 20 to go, Virginia Tech and South Carolina tied at 70. Matt, our VSiN primetime game of the night tipping off at the top of the hour, and as we discussed earlier in the show, Matt, Terrace Reed will be out tonight for UConn. He is averaging over 15 points and 8 rebounds per game. But It is not like they are facing a fully healthy Kansas squad. So looking at the line right now, UConn's still a 2.5-point favorite here, Matt, against the Kansas Jayhawks.
Yeah, like I said, I played Connecticut minus 1.5 overnight. It was 2 at a lot of spots. A few books had 1.5. But now it's UConn minus 2.5. A bit surprising, but you have significant injuries on both sides. You mentioned it, Terrace Reed. Going before his injury, going into the Arizona game, he's the top scorer and rebounder for UConn. He was out in the Arizona game. He was supposed to be back tonight. Danny Hurley said no minutes restriction for Reed, and then I find out today Reed's out. So I'm looking for a way to get out of the bet. And then I also find out Darren Peterson's out for Kansas. So kind of a no play for me at this point. I still lean UConn. You have maybe the most important player for both teams out tonight, and that's disappointing because this is a marquee matchup. UConn at Fog Allen. Doesn't get much better than that, but number 2.5, 141. Maybe that's something we'll watch live here after tip-off and see if we notice something that's worth a bet. Kentucky, 6.5, 7-point favorite against North Carolina at Rupp Arena tonight, total of 164. Total's about what I thought it should be, so even though I was going to look to bet over, not going to play that, don't see an advantage there. I did play USC tonight. I got USC minus 1.5 in USC money line at Oregon. Nate Biddle out for the Ducks, and he's a very important player for Oregon.
Rodney Rice.
USC, by the way, USC very impressive at the Maui Invitational last week.
No doubt, and they had a thrilling victory, two Thursdays ago against Troy. Triple overtime, crazy game before they went out to Hawaii, and they win the Maui Invitational. And then Oregon, Matt, they come out to Vegas, and they get swept. Lose all three games here at the Players Era. You mentioned Nate Biddle. He's out for Oregon. Also worth noting, Rodney Rice out for USC, averaging 20 points per game. So a couple of big players out for their Big Ten opener here tonight. So USC 7-0, Oregon losing three straight.
The Troy Trojans played probably the best two games of season on back-to-back at San Diego State and USC.
Beat San Diego State
by one in
multiple overtimes, and then really had multiple opportunities. And then the craziness of the end of the game, the ball gets poked away from behind, and USC makes a contested three at the buzzer to win 107-106. That game was absolutely nuts that USC was able to win.
Matt, I was trying to look up the scores. I think on back-to-back nights, Troy won at San Diego State like 108-107. What was that, in double overtime? And then the next night at USC lost 109, or two nights later lost 109-108 double overtime.
Yeah.
What was it?
It was Tuesday, November 18th. They won in double overtime at Viejas, 108-107.
Okay.
So you nailed it. And then in triple overtime, two nights later, they lost in triple overtime, 107-106 to USC.
That's unbelievable.
That's
just. And USC hit a lucky as hell shot to win the game.
And then Troy on Monday, Matt, loses in double overtime at home to West Georgia. So,
hey, West Georgia's an up-tempo offensive team. I actually looked at that, and I thought the over was going to be the play in that game. What was the final? I think
93-89 in double overtime.
The former West Georgia coach went to IU Indy, right? And he's running that crazy up-tempo offense.
Was it West Georgia?
I thought he left West Georgia to go to IU Indy.
Thought it was some school in West Virginia, but regardless, West Georgia got the win over Troy. By the way, Troy's head coach, you might remember, UT Arlington, who very unceremoniously fired Scott Cross back in 2018. Very surprising to most. And he's been at Troy for 7 years.
Ben Hallett was at West Liberty.
Okay, that's what it was. Yeah.
That's what it was.
All right. So a whole lot going on. Matt, we do have some food recommendations.
We get these on Twitter?
D-Gen Southern Gent says, Matt, next time...
Okay.
Try the same Panera sandwich, but put it on tomato basil bread. It's a sneaky good palate for it, bringing out the flavor in both the chicken and the avocado.
Is that Bobby Flay?
I don't know. All I know is we got a whole lot. We get, you know, you come for sports betting, but you stay for Panera bread discussions.
There are all sorts of options out there. That's what's great about fast food. Is that, Tim, some of the toughest decisions I have to make every day is where am I headed to eat next?
Just a quick update down in Durham, and the Duke Blue Devils and the Florida Gators. Florida putting in a little bit of a three-quarters court press as they've cut their deficit down to 6, 40-34, under 16 minutes to go. Oklahoma pulling away from Wake Forest. They lead by 11 over the Demon Deeks. And Texas A&M, a five-point lead over Pitt. We'll get you updated on all the other college basketball. Early look at week 14 of the NFL slate as well. It's VSiN Primetime.